Well, the elevator is quiet, so I guess it's time to start. I foresee no great rush of new incomers, so. Welcome to the, much to my surprise, fourth annual Henry Charles Lea Lecture, commemorating the work of one of the greatest American historians of medieval and early modern Europe, whose books remain in print and are still of use to scholars, which can be said of few other historians of the 19th century, and whose library is one of the great academic comforts of this university. I wish to thank especially Professor Julia Verkolantsev of the Slavic Studies Department and Mr. John Pollock of Special Collections for helping to arrange today in the face of my frequent and, alas, unavoidable absence. I'll introduce our speaker in a moment, but I will begin by saying how pleased and surprised Mr. Lea would be to know that a lecture in his memory is being given a few steps from his own library by a scholar from the Catholic University of Lublin in Poland. Heresy and Inquisition seem to have caught on and remained of interest. And that would have pleased Mr. Lea, too. Not surprised, I think, but pleased him. The subject of today's lectures, Wycliffe's writings in 15th century Bohemia and Poland, is not one that Lea, or indeed a great many other people in his time, dealt with, nor could they have. The topic, however, remains important, not only for the history of ideas, but for the history of communications. How did ideas travel and exert influence far from their points and circumstances of origin? One of Peter Abelard's 12th century critics complained that libri volant, books fly over the mountains, namely Abelard's books, and that was a bad thing. And who could stop them? Europe in the 15th century, as Margaret Aston pointed out some years ago in a very smart book, was remarkably cosmopolitan, larger, and probably had more flying books than the 12th century, Wycliffe's among them. Wycliffe and communications are worth thinking about. Our lead lecturer today is Paweł Kras, assistant professor at the Institute of History and lecturer in the School of Polish Language and Culture at the Catholic University of Lublin in Poland. Professor Kras was trained at Lublin and at the Central European University in Budapest that has emerged in the last two decades as one of the great academic forces of Europe. And his research has led him to Mainz, Wolfenbüttel, Vatican City, Oxford, and Leuven, Belgium, as well as to several research libraries in the United States, where he is currently a visiting scholar at St. Louis University and the Vatican Library film collection. He is one of those inspiring young international historians whose careers and skills and energy bode well for the cosmopolitan future of the profession. He has also, of course, organized a session at Kalamazoo, by now de rigueur for international historians. His first book, Ad Abolendam Diversarum Heresium Pravitatem, Toward the Abolition of the Depravity of Diverse Heresies, the Inquisitorial System, has just been published in Polish, but it deals with all of Europe, and it has a long summary in English, so it is accessible. And I have one of the 500 copies that was printed, so it will go to the Lea Library. I first encountered Professor Kras's work when I reviewed the large conference volume Praedicatoris Inquisitoris, published by the Istituto Storico Dominicano in Rome in 2004. While reviewing it and reading it, I came upon an article with the modest title, Dominican Inquisitors in Medieval Poland. I had no idea what to expect. Both of them, I thought to myself. What I got, however, was a brilliant contribution that greatly enhanced our knowledge of the treatment of heretics in Eastern Europe, along with a 20-page catalog of Dominican inquisitors in Poland from 1318 to 1500. It's no exaggeration to say that Paweł Kras has expanded the scholarly geography of heresy and inquisition probably more than any other scholar since Alexander Pachowski's work on Brandenburg and Bohemia. After establishing email contact through a friend, I found that Paweł Kras was going to be in the States this term, and I thought, what better Lea lecturer to follow Bob Moore, Pete Biller, and Diane Elliott than Professor Kras? It's my great pleasure to present him today and his lecture, John Wycliffe's Writings in 15th Century Bohemia and Poland, Professor Kras.
I'm really overwhelmed by this very warm introduction and all these wonderful comments on my work. Goodness, I didn't expect so much. It's a great honor for me to be here. It's really a personal pleasure and a great privilege to give a lecture in this place, a place so closely related to Henry Charles Lea, whose research so much contributed to the modern scholarship on the medieval Inquisition heresy. And it's really great to talk about this part of Europe, which for a long time had not been studied, as the areas where Inquisition operated, where heretics were persecuted by bishops or papal Inquisition. I would like, just at the beginning, to thank Professor Peters for inviting me here, and to my friend Yulia Verkhovantsev for all paperwork and formalities she did to arrange my stay. Okay, that's I appreciate your work. In my today's lecture, I would like to take you for a historical trip back to 15th century Bohemia and Poland, which in the Middle Ages formed the outskirts of Western Christianity, the Republika Christiana. What I'm going to do is to present you how the books produced in one country, England, by a man of great learning, John Wycliffe, traveled across continental Europe, inspiring people, the people in another country, Bohemia, and contributing to the growth of a vast religious movement, which is known as the Bohemian Reformation, Hasid Revolution, and by other terms. Let me start with a short story presented by Ignaz Silvius Piccolomini, later Pope Pius II, which seems to be very significant for the transmission of Wycliffe's ideas from England to Bohemia. In his seminal work on the Bohemian history, Historia Bohemica, published in 1458, Piccolomini tells how the books of John Wycliffe had been brought to Prague by a Bohemian nobleman by name Putridius Pistis, in rough translation, a rotten fish. The noble first studied in Prague, where he became advocate of the realist concept of universals. Then he went to Oxford to learn more about Wycliffe's ideas. After reading Wycliffe's The Universalibus, he started collecting his other works. Piccolomini mentioned by title only the Ecclesia and the Civili Dominio, but noted that in his collection there were many other writings of Wycliffe against the clergy. On his return to Bohemia, the noble brought his collection of Wycliffe's works, treating it as a precious treasure, Veluti Preciosum Thesaurum. Piccolomini comments, quote, "This way he infected other Bohemians with the poison of Wycliffe's doctrine he had been imbued with in England," quote ends. Piccolomini's story about the transmission of heresy from England to Bohemia became very popular. You can find the same story repeated in other chronicles produced all around Europe in the second half of the 15th century and the very beginning of the 16th century. I remember that the same story is quoted extensively in the monumental work of Polish chronicler Jan Długosz, who produced a marvelous 12-volume book on the Polish history. For many contemporaries, the story served to demonstrate the direct impact of Wycliffe's ideas on the growth of the Hussite movement in late medieval Bohemia. Wycliffe's position in the history of religious dissent in the late Middle Ages has already been well assessed. There is no direct evidence that Wycliffe was personally engaged in the dissemination of his ideas outside the university milieu of Oxford. Nevertheless, his doctrine widely circulated throughout England, giving birth to the popular movement of Lollardy, termed by Anne Hudson a premature reformation. By the end of the 14th century, Wycliffe's anti-clerical arguments, of course in much simplified form, constituted the core of the Lollard doctrine. The condemnation of his theological ideas, first by Pope Gregory XI in 1377, then the Blackfriars Council of 1382, and finally by the General Council of Constance in 1415, did not stop the spreading of his writings all around Western Christianity. His works were copied in England and circulated on the continent, attracting mostly some intellectuals. Wycliffe's anti-clerical ideas also gained some popularity among the gentry, who criticized fiscal privileges of the church and demanded secularization of its land estates. Some of his ideas echoed in the Protestant movements of the 16th century, when Wycliffe was claimed a forerunner of and the morning star of the Reformation, just to use the terms of Margaret Aston. His contributions to the development of medieval political theory, in particular his concept of lordship and separation of the lay power from the ecclesiastical, has been generally acknowledged and ranks him together with Marcellus of Padua, John of Paris, or William Ockham. Nevertheless, Wycliffe's fortunes in late medieval Bohemia remain a fascinating phenomenon. Wycliffe's contribution to the Bohemian Reformation has become the subject of studies by Czech, German, and English historians, to mention here the magisterial works of Josef Lozert, Otokar Odložník, or more recent studies of Franciszek Schmachel, William Herold, Catherine Walsh, and Anne Hudson. And here I just mention how much I'm indebted to Professor Schmachel and to Hudson for their great learning and their willingness to share their knowledge with me. Franciszek Schmachel, one of his papers, published in England in the early 1970s, has remarked that Wycliffe lived a double life, one in England and second in Bohemia, distant from his homeland by about 900 miles. In contrast to England, where Wycliffe's ideas were condemned as heretical and his followers persecuted, in Bohemia he became the most respected scholar and an influential authority in philosophy and theology. Bohemian reformers shared with Wycliffe the same reverence for the Bible, which became central for their program of church reform. Wycliffe devoted several theological commentaries to a careful exegesis of the scripture. The most important were the Postilla Super Totam Bibliam, Opus Evangelicum, and De Veritate Sacra Scriptura. In his study of the Bible, Wycliffe rejected the scholastic tradition and advocated the principle of sola scriptura. In his writings, the Bible was treated as the only reliable source of God's word and the collection of principles which should be respected by every Christian. Wycliffe's arguments against the corrupted church also gained much following in Prague. Professors and students of Charles University in Prague admired his subtle methods of logical analysis and critical comments on the clergy. His commentaries on the Bible were copied and discussed, making Wycliffe the best interpreter of the scripture. Some Bohemian readers were so fascinated by Wycliffe's studies on the Bible, but they called him a fifth evangelist. Wycliffe's nickname, Dr. Evangelicus, first coined by his English followers, became very popular in Bohemia. And reading Bohemian copies, you may come across a number of references to the quotations from Dr. Evangelicus. One of the Prague scribes who copied Wycliffe's writings at the beginning of the 15th century referred to him as Dr. Evangelicus super omnes evangelistas. The leaders of the Bohemian Reformation regarded Wycliffe as a great thinker and good Christian. They never accepted his condemnation by the church authorities. In the collection of Wycliffe's writings, owned by Jan Hus, the leader of the Bohemian Reformation made a comment referring to Wycliffe as Magister Venerabilis Sacra Theologiae, Verus et Magnus Professor. In a number of his writings and public declarations, Hus stressed his commitment to Wycliffe's ideas. In one of his sermons delivered in the Bethlehem Chapel in the old town of Prague in 1407, Hus wished his soul to rest next to the soul of Wycliffe. At the Council of Constance, Hus steadfastly defended his adherence to the ideas of the Oxford theologian and rejected to abjure them. In fact, in July 1415, Hus was condemned for heresy, which mostly resulted from his adherence to Wycliffe's articles. Towards the end of the 14th century, Wycliffe's ideas attracted a number of Bohemian professors and students at Prague University. They were widely discussed and stimulated the growth of the Hussite doctrine. Little is known about the early inflow of Wycliffe's writings into Bohemia. The oldest Bohemian copies of his works came from the last decade of the 14th century. However, there is some evidence that some of his writings were available in Prague as early as 1380s. The available sources do not record when and where Bohemian scholars got hold of his works. Probably the first contact with Wycliffe's works took place at the University of Paris, which in 1370s became host to many Bohemian students. Wycliffe's realist concept of universals provoked much discussion at Paris and stimulated a growing interest in his works. This is partly confirmed by the testimony of Jerome of Prague, a friend of Hus, one of the leaders of the Bohemian Reformation, who confessed during his trial in 1410 in Vienna that he had learned Wycliffe's logic as a student in Paris. For a long time, Laureate communities in England provided the best opportunity to get access to a variety of Wycliffe's works. Until Thomas Arundel's visitation of Oxford in 1409, his writings were in abundance there. They were studied, commented, and copied by a number of Wycliffe's friends and followers. Czech visitors at Oxford seem to have been the first who inspired the import of Wycliffe's writings to Bohemia. In the early 1360s, Master Wojciech Rankow of Jeżów spent a few months in Oxford studying mostly the writings of Richard Fitzrave. His visit in Oxford must have been a very fruitful and in some sense unforgettable experience. In 1388, Rankow established a scholarship for Czechs who wanted to study theology either at Oxford or Paris. Czech students at Oxford played an important role in establishing direct contacts between English Wycliffeites and Czech Hussites. They also contributed to a greater inflow of Wycliffe's works to Bohemia. Unfortunately, with the exception of Jerome of Prague, the names of Czech students who came to Oxford as Rankow scholars remain unknown. Jerome of Prague, who was the only one who came to Oxford as Rankow scholars and spent 2 years in England from 1389 to 1401, he had access to a variety of Wycliffe's works at Oxford University. Some of them he copied and brought to Bohemia on his return. Thanks to him, two late Wycliffe studies, the Dialogus and the Trialogus, arrived to Bohemia. The exchange of Czech scholars may have been intensified after the marriage of King Richard II of England and Anne of Bohemia, daughter of Roman Emperor and the Czech King Charles IV. The presence of Wycliffe's writings in Prague is first recorded in late 1370s. During the public debate at the university, the Dominican theologian Mikuláš Biceps rejected the realist concept of universals, referring directly to Wycliffe's works. A few years later, another Prague Dominican, Henry of Bitterfeld, publicly rebutted Wycliffe's arguments against absolution, also referring extensively to Wycliffe's works. In 1385, Bitterfeld drew from Wycliffe's works a list of 24 heretical articles and handed them over to the Archbishop of Prague, Jan of Jenstein. Wycliffe's first writings available in Prague were mostly his logical treatises, which presented his arguments for the real presence of universals. This was just the center of a debate at the time at the Prague University, a bone of contention between the Czech masters, the realists, and the German masters, who mostly supported the nominalist concept of universals. Wycliffe's arguments for the real presence, among the most popular works were the Universalibus, which is now preserved in 15 Bohemian copies, and the De Ideis, which these two treatises were copied in Prague in a great number. Nowadays, the oldest Bohemian manuscript of Wycliffe's logical works is dated back to 1397. It contains his four major logical works, the Universalibus, De Ideis, De Tempore, and De Materia et Forma. They all form this great Summa de Ente. It looks that later this manuscript served as a main source for several Bohemian copies. A year later, the manuscript with the same works was produced for Jan Hus, which is now in Stockholm. In the following decade, the Universalibus became a standard work discussed at the Prague University. Towards the end of the 14th century, the Universalibus was carefully edited by Prague scholars, as well as annotated with indices and a glossary. The Universalibus, together with the Ideis, provided Bohemian masters with arguments against the nominalist concept of our German adversaries. The discussion on the universals in Prague inspired the mass-scale process of copying and distributing of Wycliffe works in Prague and outside Prague as well. The date when the first theological writings of Wycliffe appeared in Prague remains also unknown. The oldest Bohemian copies with these works come from the beginning of the 15th century, the Decimonia from 1401, now in Vienna, Österreichische Nationalbibliothek, and the De Eucharistia from 1403, now in Prague, in the University Library. The other theological works are preserved in Bohemian copies from 1407. There is some evidence to argue that these copies were brought to Bohemia by two Czech students, Mikuláš Falfisch and Jiří Knechnič, who visited England in 1406 and stayed up to 1407. The missions was a turning point in the Hussite-Lollard relations. Falfisch and Knechnitz spent some time in Oxford, were through good offices of Peter Payne, one of academic Wycliffeans at Oxford. They obtained a testimonial with the seal of the University of Oxford. It attested that Wycliffe was of upright life, preeminent in the knowledge and exposition of scripture, outstanding in his writings and teaching, and had never been condemned for heresy. Peter Payne was one of the last Wycliffeites at Oxford, and he knew where to find Wycliffe's texts Bohemian scholars were searching for. He may also have acted as an intermediary between the Bohemian students and groups of Lollards outside Oxford. Falfisch and Knechnitz spent a couple of months at two small villages, each about 60 miles from Oxford. In both, our purpose was to copy Wycliffe's works. At Camerton, they copied the De Ecclesia, and in another village, on the opposite side of Oxford, at Braybrook, they copied the Dominio Divino. These two little villages were the centers of Lollard learning. We know that in the first decade of the 15th century, Braybrook was the residence of Sir Thomas Latimer, one of Lollard's knights, and Camerton at the same time was the living of Robert Lychlade, who 11 years earlier had been expelled from Merton College, Oxford, for his adherence to Wycliffe's opinion. The two Bohemians also somewhere made a copy of the De Veritate Sacra Scriptura, one of the most important Wycliffe's study on the Bible, and checked the version in Oxford. They also paid their respects to the grave of Wycliffe at Lutterworth, where in typical tourist fashion, they chipped a fragment from a tombstone and took it back to Prague. The activity of Falfisch and Knechnitz gained wild publicity in Bohemia. On several occasions, Jan Hus recounted a story about the visit in England. The Oxford testimonial concerning Wycliffe was frequently mentioned by Hus during his preaching in the Bethlehem Chapel and by Jerome of Prague, both in Prague and in Vienna. And as Silvius Piccolomini also described the enterprise of the two Bohemians in England. He asserted that they took back to Prague several books of Wycliffe, which were later copied and distributed all around Bohemia. The enterprise of Falfisch and Knechnitz was well-planned and must have resulted from some early contacts between a Czech Hussite and English Lollards. The Bohemian students knew what Wycliffe's writings they were looking for and who might help them in their search. A great number of Wycliffe's texts available in the Hussite Bohemia proves that the mission of Falfisch and Knechnitz was not a single and isolated enterprise. The success encouraged Bohemian Hussites to organize similar missions. Commenting on the abundance and variety of Wycliffe's works preserved in the Bohemian manuscripts, N. Hudson has come to the following conclusion. Quote, if all the books transported between England and Prague were put together, they would far outweigh the ability of Falfisch and Knechnitz's horses to carry them. Quote ends. Unfortunately, it's hard to name almost any other Bohemians who traveled to England to copy Wycliffe's works. According to the testimony of Jan Hus at the Council of Constance, Mikuláš Falfisch returned to England at least once and died crossing the English Channel. And also other Prague professor, Matthias of Chnatice, called Matthias the English in Czech, who traveled to England in late 1420s, early 1430s, also probably to collect some of his writings or to check some writings which were available in Prague at the time. The repressions against English Lollards made the search for Wycliffe's works more and more complicated. Luckily, the first well-documented visit of Wolfgang Knechtitz in England took place shortly before new repressions were introduced in 1407-1409 by Archbishop of Canterbury Thomas Arundel. In 1407, Arundel published the constitutions which restricted the freedom of theological discussion at the University of Oxford and put the teaching programs under the control of the church authorities. The constitutions imposed bans on uncontrolled preaching, making translation of the Bible in the vernacular, and public discussion on the Catholic doctrine. Special restrictions were applied to Wycliffe's works. Any public discussion on his writings was forbidden on pain of excommunication. 2 years, 2 years later, special censorship commission was established to examine all Wycliffe's works. In 1410, Archbishop Arundel conducted a visitation of Oxford University, interrogating anyone who was suspected of adhering to Wycliffe's opinions. Those found guilty lost their positions and faced inquisitorial trial, like William Taylor, warden of St. Edmund Hall. One of the Wycliffeites who remained at Oxford after Arundel's visitation was Peter Payne. Somehow he successfully purged himself of all suspicion of heresy in November 1410. In March 1411, the University of Convocation condemned 267 articles drawn from Wycliffe's works and published a list of his books which should be handed over to the church authorities. In the same years, hundreds of books with Wycliffe's works were burned at the stake in Oxford at Carfax. 2 years later, in January 1413, the Provincial Council in Canterbury endorsed the condemnation of Wycliffe's articles and ordered the burning of Wycliffe's heretical works in front of St. Paul Cathedral, London. The persecution of Wycliffe and his followers launched by Arundel made the access to his works in Oxford restricted and risky, especially for foreigners. Despite that, the inflow of Wycliffe's text to Prague continued undisturbed. Furthermore, in the same period, some direct contacts between the leaders of English Lollardy and the Hussite movement were established and followed by an exchange of letters. In 1410, Richard Witch, Lord Preacher, wrote to Jan Hus, lamenting the fact that he knows him only by repute. He shows himself aware of the main teaching of Hus, as well as his troubles with Prague clergy. He also mentions by name one of Hus's friends, Jakubek of Stribro. It seems that Hus received Witch's letter, and later he replied to him. In the same year, 1410, Sir John Oldcastle wrote to Vauxhall Wallstein, the Bohemian landlord and Hus's protector. A year or two later, he also wrote to King Wenceslaw of Bohemia, stressing the need of church reform and supporting the activity of Jan Hus. So there were some persons who traveled across English Channel, across France, Germany, transporting the letters and probably some books in the sacks. The growing popularity of Wycliffe's works and conflicts they provoked in Prague brought about the intervention of the Archbishop of Prague, Zbigniew Zajíc. In 1409, he condemned Wycliffe's ideas and forbade reading of Wycliffe's works. The condemnation was followed by the confiscation of Wycliffe's texts all around Prague. In his statutes, Zbigniew ordered to hand over all manuscripts containing Wycliffe's writings to his officials on pain of excommunication. The result of that action were not surprising. Despite protests of many Prague academics, about 200 books, manuscripts, were confiscated and thrown into fire in front of Prague Cathedral. The ecclesiastical bans did not prevent the Bohemian followers of Wycliffe from further studies of his works, and the production of new copies continued with new energy. The catalogue of Wycliffe's writings, available in Prague around 1415, lists everything he ever wrote except for about 30 minor works. In Hussite Bohemia, Wycliffe's writings were copied, annotated, and commented on a mass scale. Some works were supplied with prefaces, lists of contents, and indices. In Prague, there are two manuscripts which contain extensive indices to most of Wycliffe's works. We know that Peter Payne, who arrived to Prague in late 1414 or early 1415, supervised the work on the Bohemian editions of Wycliffe's works. In 1420s, he wrote dozens of summaries and drew lists of references to various Wycliffe's writings. There is no doubt how much our knowledge of Wycliffe's works owes to Bohemian scribes. The catalogue of Wycliffe's writings published by William Thomson lists 435 titles. If every collection of Wycliffe's sermons is counted as one whole, as Anne Hudson has suggested, the number of his works can be reduced to about 200. Thanks to that, we can better understand the scale of the circulation of Wycliffe's writings in 15th century Bohemia. Despite considerable destruction of Wycliffe's texts by the clergy, to this day, some 130 manuscripts containing Wycliffe's works survived in Bohemian hands. It suffices to say that almost half of his writings are preserved exclusively in Bohemian copies. This half includes such important works as the De Civili Dominio, De Ecclesia, De Officio Regis, De Potestate Papae, De Eucharistia, or Supplementum Triologi. Assuming that Wycliffe's writings were much more systematically destroyed in England than in Bohemia, the production in the latter country remains really a unique phenomenon. A considerable dispersion and enormous destruction of Wycliffe's writings make it difficult to trace back the way they came from England to Bohemia and circulated in the new geographical location. To carry out such a research project, new critical editions of Wycliffe's writings are needed. A careful examination of colophons, followed by the tracking of the names found with the histories, may also indicate the concern to disseminate materials of English origin in Bohemia. The classical edition of Wycliffe's works by the Wycliffe Society, where some of the works were edited from single manuscripts, is completely unsatisfactory for such research. As William Thomson has demonstrated, our knowledge of Wycliffe's works preserved in medieval manuscripts is much better than what was known by the editors working for the Wycliffe Society. Only complex paleographical and codicological studies on the handwritten legacy of Wycliffe's texts may shed new light on the transmission of his ideas in East Central Europe. New opportunities of such research were presented by recent critical editions of two treatises, the Universalibus and the Trinitate. In contrast, now I will just go to the Polish part of my paper. So in contrast to the great popularity of Wycliffe's ideas in Bohemia, which can be measured by a considerable number of the Bohemian copies in which his writings have survived, in late medieval Poland, the teaching of the Doctor Evangelicus gained little following. Wycliffe's first writings came to Poland from Bohemia, thanks to the intensive intellectual exchange between the Charles University of Prague and the Krakow University. Until the University of Krakow was reopened in 1400, most Poles had studied at Prague. From 1348 to 1400, some 300 Poles enrolled at the Charles University. Most Krakow professors obtained their degrees in Prague, and 9 of the first 11 Krakow rectors studied at the Charles University. So in fact, the Polish intellectual elite of the 15th century was mostly formed by the graduates of the Prague University. It is disputable to what extent Polish students were engaged in copying and transporting to Poland the writings of John Wycliffe. It seems that in contrast to religious works of popular Czech reformers like Konrad of Waldhausen, Matthias of Janov, or Miloš Kroměříž, the sophisticated philosophical and theological texts of Wycliffe were probably not the primary interest. The crucial role in the import of Wycliffe's writings was played by scholars, mostly Czech scholars, who for various reasons left Prague and settled in Krakow. Thanks to a group of Prague professors such as Stefan Palec, Jan Szczekna, or Maciej Krywaczka, the Faculty of Theology was opened in Krakow in 1397. In a couple of years, it became an important intellectual center which supported conciliar reform and took a leading position in the polemic against the Hussite and Wycliffeite doctrine. The academic staff at the University of Krakow consisted mostly of the nominalists who criticized Wycliffe's treatment of universals. There is no doubt that Krakow scholars had access to Wycliffe writings and possessed some of them in their private collections. Unfortunately, only two 15th century manuscripts with Wycliffe's works have been preserved in the Polish libraries. A collection of his philosophical treatises in the Jagiellonian Library in Krakow belonged to one of the Czech professors, Stefan Palec, who was once a great supporter of Wycliffe's ideas, realist, but then he changed his mind, facing the Inquisitorial trial, and he became nominalist. He fled Prague and settled in Krakow, Poland. We may assume that as a former advocate of Wycliffe's philosophy, Palach had many more works in his private library. During his work at the Theological Faculty in Krakow, he was the best expert on Wycliffe's teaching, and he produced a number of anti-Wycliffeite, anti-Hussite tracts. In his comment, he used vastly various Wycliffe's works. After his death in 1422, Palach's private collection became a part of the university library, and his books circulated among Krakow scholars. His manuscripts was used to make the second Polish copy of Wycliffe's work, De Universalibus. The inflow of Wycliffe's works to Krakow was possibly for a long, fairly long time. It was only after the condemnation of Wycliffe's 45 articles at the Council of Constance in 1415 that his writings were forbidden in Poland and the owners were to be persecuted as suspects of heresy. At the same time, the first censors were appointed by the rector and the university collections of books were subject to their supervision. In consequence, the access to Wycliffe's writings was restricted, however not completely suppressed. When the second copy of the Universalibus was attributed to another English philosopher, William Marverley, probably just to hide the authorship of Wycliffe, and that's why it survived in the collection of the Jagiellonian Library in Krakow. Wycliffe's works were mostly confined to the private libraries of Krakow theologians who needed to study them in order to combat Wycliffe's and Hussite concepts. Despite official restrictions, Wycliffe's writings still circulated among Krakow scholars and some students. Andrzej Gałka, I will talk more about him, who remains the only known Polish Wycliffeite, reported in 1440s that Wycliffe's works were available at Krakow University and anyone could get easy access to them. That's a quotation from one of his letters. Some of Wycliffe's works were imported to Poland together with other Hussite books even after the outbreak of the Hussite Revolution in 1419. In one of his letters, Gałka referred to such books, mentioning by title three Wycliffe's treatises, the De Apostasia, De Blasphemia, and De Simonia, which he had rented from an unknown Bohemian noble, so the Hussite nobles, intellectuals acted as intermediaries between Polish enthusiasts of Wycliffe's doctrine. Despite close links between the University of Prague and Krakow in the first decade of the 15th century, the approach to the matters of philosophy and theology evolved into a different way. While at Prague, Wycliffe's realist philosophy was enthusiastically accepted by most Bohemian scholars, in Krakow it did not find almost any followers. Despite that, Krakow scholars had good knowledge of Wycliffe's ideas and discussed them during their lectures and academic thought libeta. In 1434, the Krakow professor Nicholas Kozlowski, a university delegate to the Council of Basel, brought to Krakow the extensive work of Thomas Natrivaldensis, Doctrinale Fidei Ecclesiae Catholicae contra Wycliffistas and Hussitas, which contained detailed description of Wycliffe's teaching, as well as a well-organized compendium of counter-arguments. This one of his continental copies of Netter's Doctrinale, the only Polish copy, in fact. A copy of Netter's work was later annotated with the comments of various Krakow professors and became an important source of information about Wycliffe's ideas. Once again, I mean, Gałka remains the main source of information how this idea circulated in Krakow. So Gałka admitted that he had read himself Netter's Doctrinale and claimed that many of his academic colleagues and students did the same, fast learning the basic concepts of Wycliffe's teaching. In contrast to a generally hostile attitude to Wycliffe, the reformatory activity of Jan Hus and Hussite reformers was carefully watched and gained much interest in Krakow. Not until Jan Hus was condemned by the Council of Constance as a follower of Wycliffe, had his ideas been identified with those of Wycliffe. In July 1415, the Council of Constance informed the University of Krakow about the condemnation of Wycliffe's and Hus's ideas and called for the prosecution of their adherents. In its reply, Krakow professors declared their willingness to cooperate with the church authorities in their struggle against Hussite and Wycliffeite doctrine. Since 1423, every new student at Krakow University had to reject Wycliffe's and Hus's teaching at his registration, as well as to declare that he had nothing in common with the heresy. And we had this, you know, the oath which was taken by any student who was enrolled at Krakow starting from 1423. In the anti-Hussite laws issued by the Polish clergy, Wycliffe and Hus were declared the most dangerous heretics and the worst enemies of the church, their teaching were forbidden, and their followers were to be tried on a charge of heresy. Apart from the decrees issued by the Council of Constance and immediately accepted by the Polish clergy, in 1418, Pope Martin V provided Polish bishops with the detailed instructions and a questionnaire on how to proceed against the advocates of Wycliffe and Hus, how to recognize those who upheld any ideas of Wycliffe. There was a very detailed interrogatorium for interrogating any followers of Wycliffe or Hus. In 1420, for the use of bishops, inquisitors, there was a single, in the questionnaire produced for the use of bishops, inquisitors, there was a single article concerning Wycliffe's writings. It imposed on the bishops or the delegate judges who carried out the visitation of parishes the obligation to search out works of Wycliffe, Hus, and Jerome of Prague. Those who possessed such writings were to be arrested and interrogated as suspect heretics. Against such a historical background, the fascination of Krakow professor Andrew Gałka of Dobczyn with Wycliffe's doctrine seems to have been completely exceptional. Born about 1400, probably to a peasant family in western Poland, Gałka registered at the University of Krakow in 1420 and started his studies at the Faculty of Arts. He was a talented and hard-working student. In 1422, after just 2 years as a student, which was the minimum time period allowed by the university regulations, he became Bachelor of Arts. 3 years later, Andrzej of Dobczyn was granted degree of Master of Arts and soon thereafter began lecturing at the Faculty of Arts. For almost 30 years, he taught at the University of Krakow without being in any way suspected of heresy or error. He was a highly respected scholar at the university. His reputation among his colleagues was was very high, and although he did not obtain any degree from a higher faculty, he enjoyed enough popularity to be twice elected Dean of the Faculty of Arts. When in 1449, it suddenly turned out that for a long time Gałka was a zealous reader and copies of Wycliffe's treatises, he was a respected professor of the age of 50. It is hard to find out if Gałka was anyhow involved in the conciliar movement, which during his work in Krakow was enthusiastically backed by most Krakow professors. Nevertheless, the failure of the conciliar movement in Krakow overlapped with the disclosure of his fascination with Wycliffe's doctrine. In April 1449, Vicar General of Krakow Bishop received one of Gałka's books from his friend, so-called friend, which contained Wycliffe's writings. You know, he handed over this book to this Vicar General for examination because he found some errors in the book. The bishop's official was quick in charging Master Andrew with heresy and launched an inquisitorial procedure against him. He informed the papal inquisitor in Krakow, the Dominican from the Krakow convent, about his suspicions and encouraged him to start the inquisitorial procedure. I mean, the whole story, you know, how this Wycliffe's fascination, how Gałka's fascination for Wycliffe was disclosed, I think is a good theme for a movie, essentially a movie. I think maybe one day I'll write a screenplay. Screenplay. I'm thinking about it. It comes next. In consequence, Gałka's apartment in Krakow was searched, and the church authorities seized his private library, finding the numerous writings of Wycliffe, as well as Gałka's own commentaries to Wycliffe's works. Among the confiscated texts were also some songs and poems in the Polish vernacular, which Master Andrew intended to circulate outside Krakow, and this was really shocking for the Krakow officials During the search of Gałka's apartment in Krakow, he stayed in the Cistercian monastery in Mogiła near Krakow doing penance for an unknown disciplinary offense. Somehow he learned about the search, I think that the abbot told him, who was his friend, and the charges set out against him. Being afraid to face an inquisitorial trial of heresy, he fled in a hurry to neighboring Silesia, as he put it in his letters, to save his life. Gałka's fate after his escape from Poland is obscure. There's some evidence that he left Silesia for Tabor in Bohemia, where in 1451 he was met by Aeneas Silvius Piccolomini, who just visited Bohemia at the time. In his reports from his visit at Tabor, Piccolomini described a bitter discussion he had with this Gauka on the Utraquist communion and the endowment of the Constantinian Church. In the light of his letters, we have three letters left by Gauka, written after his escape from Poland, and the only vernacular eulogy of John Wycliffe, it is clear that Gauka was an advocate of Wycliffe's philosophy and theology. In his writings, he openly acknowledged his interest in the ideas of a Doctor Evangelicus and admitted that he had been reading and copying his writings for almost 20 years. He mentioned by title only five Wycliffe's writings, the Universalibus, the Ideis, the Simonia, and the Blasphemia and the Apostasia, and claimed to have known others. His access to Wycliffe's writings provided him with good knowledge of Wycliffe's logic and through his concept of universals. In opposition to the nominalist philosophy prevalent at Krakow, Gauka adopted an ultra-realist theory. In his opinion, the realist concept of universals made it possible to explain basic church dogmas such as the unity and separation of three persons of the Holy Trinity or the two natures of Christ. Gauka's commitment to Wycliffe's philosophy made him ready to defend publicly the realist concept of universals as well as to demonstrate its practical application in the domain of theology. And from his exile in Silesia, he sent a letter to his former colleagues from Krakow proposing them to organize a public debate on Wycliffe's concept. They did not accept it. Referring to his teaching experience at the university, Gauka criticized its professors, his former colleagues, for their ignorance and incompetence in matters of philosophy. In his opinion, by the rejection of Wycliffe's teaching, they lacked necessary knowledge to study philosophical and theological concepts. With irony, he argued that their ignorance made them similar to a blind man who cannot recognize colors. In his admiration for Wycliffe, Andrzej Gauka shared the enthusiasm of the Prague masters and Tiberites. He extolled Wycliffe's courage to disclose the lies and abuses of the modern clergy, and in his Polish vernacular eulogy of Wycliffe, he presented Wycliffe as one of the greatest thinkers to whom goes merit for revealing uncorrupted teaching of Christ. I'll just read the very beginning of this vernacular poem in the English translation. Ye Poles and ye Germans, men of all nations, if you waver, be it in speech and any word or script, Wycliffe will tell you truth. None there is like him, no pagan master, nor yet a Christian one, nor will there be another until the judgment day. And it goes for long, I mean, it's a long eulogy. It was the only anti-clerical vernacular writing, Polish writing we know. So this is, everybody's student has to study this piece of Polish poetry from the 15th century. And he's familiar with this poem. The scattered and fragmentary evidence makes it hardly possible to evaluate the extent of Gauka's knowledge of Wycliffe's teaching. His writings shed little light on how well he knew Wycliffe's theology and to what extent he was acquainted with his anti-clerical ideas. According to his own statements, he adhered to Wycliffe's realist logic and in particular adopted the concept of universals. As far as his ecclesiastical opinions are concerned, it might be assumed that he shared Wycliffe's arguments against the corruption of the clergy, which had originated from the donation of Emperor Constantine the Great. One may suggest that if he had read the five works of Wycliffe he mentioned in his letters, he would also have learned about Wycliffe's concept of the church, treated as the community of the elect, as well as his denial of Christ's presence in the sacrament of Eucharist. However, in his writings, Andrzej of Dobczyn did not declare his adherence to any of the most radical ideas of Wycliffe's doctrine. It seems that in his fascination with Wycliffe's teaching, he stopped at the same point as Hus, rejecting Wycliffe's critique of the most fundamental church dogmas. Gauka's adherence to Wycliffe's teaching cast a shadow on the reputation of the whole University of Krakow, which had to take countermeasures to prevent any further circulation of Wycliffe's ideas. Moreover, Krakow professors were outraged by Gauka's controversy and took a concerted effort to demonstrate that they had nothing in common with the heretical interests of their former colleague. In the letter to the Bishop of Silesia, where Gauka found refuge, he was called a black sheep among the university flock. Probably from the same time comes a malicious comment which was inserted into the university registers above the note with Gauka's registration. An unknown scribe wrote that Gauka had been the worst heretic with whom everybody had words. After Gauka's adherence to Wycliffe doctrine became public, the university once again condemned Wycliffe's ideas. The Polish clergy started to carry out an intensive interrogation of his friends and relatives outside the university, trying to check out if Gauka had any followers. This action proved ineffective as nobody was charged with Wycliffe's heresy, and apart from Gauka, it's hard to find any other direct influence of Wycliffe's ideas in late medieval Poland. As you can see, the fate of Wycliffe's writings in East Central Europe varied. While in 15th century Bohemia, his works widely circulated, both in the academic milieu of the Prague University and outside, were copied, translated, commented. In 15th century Poland, only single writings were available and were restricted to the group of Krakow theologians. The wide circulation of Wycliffe's writing in the Hasi Bohemia is well reflected by a high number of copies produced by Bohemian scribes. In Bohemia, Wycliffe became one of the forerunners of the Hussite revolution, providing its leaders with arguments against the church wealth and the privilege of the clergy. In Poland, his ideas were closely related to the Hussite and became the target of academic polemic. Thank you very much for your attention.
I guess there's time for questions. There's also a small reception if we can. Oh, it doesn't matter. Well, we can have some questions and then continue on next door.
That's really very interesting to see how Wycliffe contributed to this growth and evolution of the Bohemian identity in the late 14th and 15th centuries, especially in the period of the Hussite Revolution. And I mean, it has just come to my mind the arguments made by the Utrechtist theologian Jan of Przybram, who was one of his of Wycliffeite at the University of Prague. But he did not support all extreme ideas which were the concept of Wycliffe. And in a couple of his sermons and in some of his writings, he commented on this great reverence of Wycliffe among the Hussites, saying, what we do have in common with Wycliffe? He was an Englishman. We should listen more to our Czech foreigners like Miloš Kroměříž, like Matěj Fianov. What do we have in common with Wycliffe? He was far away from us. So his comments made in 1420s, I think they well illustrate how popular Wycliffe was at the time among Hussites, and he became a hero of this national dispute between the Germans, between the Czechs. This was the time when Wycliffe ideas, they just drew a wedge in the university milieu of Prague University, and as you know, this 1409 decree of Charles IV, Kutna-Hora decree, which just expelled, in fact, it led to the expulsion of Czech masters and Czech students from Prague, just because of the discussion of Wycliffe concepts, just because when the German professors drew a list of heretical articles from Wycliffe's works and presented it to the university convocation, and the Germans had majority in the convocation. So we passed the decree to ban the circulation of Wycliffe's writings. The Czech scholars who supported this realist concept, they refused to accept it. They went to the King of Bohemia, and of course he changed the method of counting the votes in the convocation. So this led to this expulsion of German masters. So I think this is really, I mean, Wycliffe contributed to this growth of this Bohemian national question case in the Hasid Revolution. Friedrich Schmacher wrote a wonderful book on this issue. Yeah. So I think it's available in French, only in French. Thank you. Yeah, I remember that back, I mean, 10 years ago, I discussed for a long time with Anne Hudson this problem of Lord Hasid relations and possible contacts with other university, other Lord groups, schools, Lord schools outside Oxford. There's no direct evidence about any direct contact between the Czech scholars, students who went to travel to England and these Lord schools. I mean, this is just by good luck that we knew about the mission of these two Czech students in 1406, 1407, mostly because there is one single manuscript which they produced in England, which is now in the collection of Österreichische Bibliothek in Vienna, and thanks to the colophons they made at the end of each tract they copied, they put down the date and the place where it was copied. It's Camerton, Braybrook, and Oxford. That's why we know that they were there. I mean, as Anne Hudson told me 10 years ago, she has assumed that there were some contacts. But well, we are waiting for new sources to shed more light on where they went and what books they acquired there. There's one question. I mean, of course, Peter Payne is this only direct intermediary between English lords and Czech Hussites, and he came to Bohemia. We knew for certain that he brought a number of Wycliffe's books in his luggage to Bohemia. So his contribution to this edition of Bohemian copies of his work was enormous. He enormously contributed to this growth and evolution of Hussite theology in 1420s, 1430s. But apart from Peter Payne, it's difficult to name another Lord Wycliffe, I mean, academic Wycliffeite or another follower of Wycliffe like Purvey or Hereford, who had anyhow in common with these missions of Bohemian scholars. We don't know it. Probably there were some contacts, but I can't give you any information on that. Maybe we'll know more. Please. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. First, I had my time was limited, so I couldn't go into details with other questions. There's one whole question which needs to be examined, the problem of circulation, the problem of the vernacular Bible. There's the Czech vernacular Bible produced by Jan Hus and by his followers. There's a Polish one, which is preserved only in fragments. There's some piece of, most of the Old Testament from 1450s, which was made, we know it, it was made with some assistance of Bohemian scholars who traveled to Poland. The book was commissioned by the Polish queen, the fourth wife of Polish king Jagiełło, somewhere in 1440s in Valencia State, which belonged to the queen. And we know that some Bohemian scholars were invited to cooperate with Polish scholars on this Polish vernacular Bible, the first one we have. And the Hungarian Bible, there's also the translation of the Hungarian Bible, made by by a group of students of Charles University. So the question is, how much were inspired, you know, by this Lord's study of the Bible, by the Wickfight Bible, and by what was going on around the Bible in Prague. I mean, this translation of the Bible by Jan Hus was, you know, just the center of the church reform, and it was very important for the whole movement just to give access to the Bible to the laity, to let them read it in vernacular. So my guess is that this is the topic, very, very interesting topic, to worth further studies. So this is one example how it circulated.
Yes. Well, since you raised up the question about the connection of the Bible with Poland and Bohemia, the area of great interest, it's interesting that there's another historical event that plays into the whole history of the medical translation of the Bible, and this is the invitation of Charles IV of the creation of the Bible, where among the only Catholics left to Slavic translation of the Bible, and the first translation of the Czech Bible, sometime in the 1370s or 1380s, was actually codified and written in Bible script. So, which basically raises the question, what was the agent of the medical translation? And this translation was influenced by Wycliffe's or Hus's influence, or this translation was primarily influenced by the authority of Saint Jerome, who was the patron saint of the Croats, who was, and this is the myth that was invented in the 13th and 13th century when the Croatian Lavalet got the permission of the Pope to read liturgy in Slavic and use Polonic letters. So, and Charles IV was fascinated with this tradition, this vernacular tradition, and probably used the authority of Saint Jerome to implement, and he even there was instructed this theory that the Czech language is a continuation of Croatian language, which is quite called sacred because Saint Jerome originally is Slav, was born somewhere in Croatian. Well, and of course, Saint Jerome is still, you know. this is the period of the myth that it was the religious truth that mattered, the matter not really factual truth. So, and another thing that is interesting that the Polish Bible, the first Polish Bible of Królowa Mazowie, it's 1455.
Yeah.
And by that time, already there have been at least three redactions of the Czech Bible. And the first one could be, or the second one could be dated back to Hus.
Yeah.
Whereas the third one is primarily the Hussite period, which is 1420s, 1430s. But the analysis of the Polish Bible shows it depending on the first and second redaction, which was basically codified in Black Lyric. So my question was, and this is something that.
Yeah.
Give this historical background. I always ask myself why in 1455, or maybe several years prior, when the third redaction of the Czech Bible, the Hussite redaction, was so widespread and many monasteries had it, why the Czech and Polish scholars who were commissioned translation,
it's a good question, and I can't give you, you know, the answer to that. That's really a very interesting question, and I should do something with that. I mean, I was struck. I mean, I did not. I'm not a linguist. I had to when I was working on the Hussites in Poland, looking, studying mostly the registers of Polish bishops, I found some references to the Bible production in the first vernacular Bible, which was produced, was commissioned by the Queen. And there were some suspicions that some unknown Czech scholars traveled from Bohemia to the villages owned by the Queen, and they worked on some vernacular texts. So they were put on trial, they were interrogated. We don't have the whole interrogations of this person. We know that there was a problem. Yeah. So they, late 1440s, late beginning 1450s, and we know that there are some more Czech texts. I can't give you any titles. There are no titles of the Czech books which circulated in Poland, and especially in this area when this Polish Bible was produced at that time. The other interesting thing is that this Bible by the Polish Queen, this is for me, it's not for me, but for Polish scholars, it seems to be mostly a sort of experiment. You know, it was not intended to make it, to circulate outside this restricted group of notaries, of scholars who work on that. In Bohemia, the vernacular Bible was copied, was annotated, some pictures were also it was supplied with pictures. We have some of these copies are preserved. This Czech Bible cum picturis. So I saw one of them in Wolfenbüttel. So we know that it was made for popular use for the people. In Poland, I think that it was mostly a kind of linguistic experiment. So that's why there's only one copy and only fragments survive. So this is also quite significant for the differences in the approach to how the text circulated and who had access to them between Poland and Bohemia at that time. Thank you very much for coming.